Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. This is episode number 127. We have two lovely sponsors. We have Environments for Humans promoting their Digital Biz Summit, literally the Digital Business Summit, but the URL is digitalbizsummit.com. That'll get you where you need to go. It's a $99 conference, a one-day thing coming up this August 20th. So that's coming up really quick here. Get on it. Go check it out. There's people talking about, and it's online, so you're listening live. People are talking live, but it's happening. You know, you watch through your computer, Dan Moll, Emily Lewis, Carl Smith, Rob Haar, people talking about how to run your digital business, like how to deal with cash flow, how to deal with hiring, how to deal with just the whole world of running a small business. Check that out. It's just going to be brilliant. And it's just a really inexpensive conference too. So up your game. And then Media Temple, who sponsors, who hosts Shop Talk Show and CSS Tricks and a bunch of different sites. I've used them primarily as my host for over the years. Tremendous customer support, all kinds of different servers for all kinds of different websites. Check them out at mediatemple.net. We'll tell you a little bit more about both of them later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Hello, Shopomaniacs! You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development. I'm Dave Ruper, and with me is Chris Coyer. Chris?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we have Mr. Tobias Gunther today, right?
Hello. Thanks for having me. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. We had Tobias on because he is the CEO, I suppose, of a company called Fornova, which creates a bit of software that I use all the time called Tower, and I suspect a lot of you out there in the world use too, because it is it's a Mac client for dealing with Git, essentially, right?
Absolutely, yes. A tiny bit of software that costs us time and love also. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Made with
lots of love.
It's kind of good timing because you all just released Tower 2.0. So congratulations on that. That's pretty cool.
Thanks for that. Yeah, right. Just a week ago, we released version 2 and received tons of feedback, lovely feedback, critical feedback, but tons of it in any case. Yeah. We're pretty satisfied with the feedback that we got so far. So great launch, yes.
True. Yeah, so I figured we could just talk about that a little bit, and then having you on gives us a good opportunity to just talk about version control and Git and stuff in general. So
yeah,
we'll
great.
Get to that in a minute. First of all, like, you call the company Fornova, but does it do a bunch of stuff, or is Git Tower like or you just call it Tower, right? The URL is Git Tower, but the app is just Tower, right?
Yeah, right. So at the moment, Tower is the only product that Fornova ships. We're planning on extending that, but we already wanted to start another product and some 1 month ago, and we noticed that to do one thing right, you need all the focus you have. So we'll postpone everything else a little bit and concentrate on making the best product, the best one product we're capable of. So no worries, we're fully concentrated on Tower.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that seems like the way to go. It seems that's a big decision to decide to branch off, or no matter how good of an idea it seems or whatever. And you have a couple offices, and you're based in Germany.
Right. Yeah, we have one in Berlin and one in Stuttgart in the south, and we have another developer sitting in near the Frankfurt area. So we're covering all of Germany and just five guys actually, but split yeah. all over.
So you should call yourselves Five Nova.
Five Nova, yeah. We have to change that all the time, from Seven Nova to Three yeah. Nova and Four Nova. Yeah, we can't decide, so we'll keep it at the four.
Okay. that's pretty cool. So I mean, if people have no idea, and I'm sure there are some of you out there. Do you have the? We'd be happy to hear the explanation of what Tower is and why it exists.
Yeah, give us your elevator pitch on Tower. What is it? Why?
Tower makes using Git, which is a version control system, a lot easier on the Mac currently only. That's the elevator pitch. So if I can get deeper into what version control is.
It's a really tall elevator. Yes.
Just one short message about Tower is it makes your life easier working with a really complicated system. Actually, the learning curve when you get into Git, into version control with Git, is pretty steep. It's not an easy entry for newbies to get version control right with Git, but still, Git is a really good system. It is the system that is used by Ruby on Rails, by jQuery, by the Linux kernel. So all the big projects, all the good guys are using Git since quite a while. And Tower just makes using it easier, makes the complicated stuff easier.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it does, right? So Git is a command line tool. I mean, Git itself is literally a command line tool, right? So if you can use it with no graphic user interface at all. You can just go type git branch whatever and git commit and all that stuff. Certainly nothing against people that learn it that way. But if you're, would you say that Git is for people who just don't like learning that way? Or is there things that Git, that is just better to handle visually? Or what is the, I mean, I guess that's a softball because I feel like I can answer some of those questions, right? I mean, there's certainly things that merging, for example, just becomes a lot easier. If there's a conflict, Tower can help you out with that, or it's a lot easier to kind of understand what's going on and solve those conflicts when I can see it, when there's an interface behind it, which is a lot harder to do on the command line. So, I mean, I just wonder how you think of it as does it benefit your business to roll with the myth that, you know, like, don't use Git through the command line? That's a joke.
No, I'm trying to, today I'm trying to be honest. no kidding. Okay. The thing is, there is often a debate, the command line versus a graphical user interface. And I think it's the wrong question or the wrong debate, because even we here at Fernova use Git on the command line daily, but we accompany it with our own graphical user interface with Tower. So a lot of stuff is easy to do on the command line and is fine to do on the command line. But if you want to use the interesting stuff, or even some of the boring stuff that is just belongs to your day-to-day work, some of this is a lot easier to do in a graphical user interface. For example, looking at a commit history, looking at the log of commits, you can do this on the command line really easily, but it's no fun. It's really hard to understand what happened. And these are the things where a graphical user interface is just making things easier. And if we're getting into more complex things, like you said, like merge conflicts or something, we just introduced a merge conflict wizard in version 2. So, a wizard, a graphical view on merge conflicts. And this is a huge step forward, because people don't understand, and rightfully they don't understand what happens and what's the problem. And trying to visualize this is great. It's just helpful in any case.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like I just saw a tweet the other day of somebody who is they have Tower, and the only time they open it is during a merge conflict. Like, they're just because. So what I think is that's an interesting thing to know about Tower that may not be immediately obvious, is that like you can just like not even have it open and be command lining your way around in Git, and then just open Tower and it will be in that state, right? So the state of Tower is just exactly representative of the state that repository is in.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. You can work with the command line and Tower side by side. So whatever you feel comfortable with on the command line, do it on the command line. That's fine. And the other stuff, the more complex stuff, the stuff that needs to be visualized or that a GUI is better for, use it in Tower and use that side by side. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I wonder if that was like a weird app development challenge, is that all apps have to deal with state, but you don't get the opportunity to add your own like proprietary state, you know, object or whatever. You just has to map to exactly however Git handles it, right?
Yes, and there's even there's even another layer of complexity because we not only the state but also the configuration happens at least partly outside of our app. We have to, or we want to respect the configuration of Git on the command line too. So this is, well, yeah, it's a bit complicated, but well, over the years you get better at this.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what, you know, that's what Tower is, and you know, you can go to git-tower and check out the screenshots and stuff. I mean, I literally use it all day every day. I think it's a great tool, so I was excited to have you on to talk about it. What can you do the slightly longer elevator pitch for us of 2.0? I mean, you'd thanks for writing a guest post on CSS Tricks about it too that introduces it, but just for the radio people, why go 2.0? Was it we have a bunch more ideas and we want to do it? Was it a business move or?
Yeah, it was actually, we wanted to round off the sharp edges that we left with version one, because there definitely are sharp edges with the version one. That's a great thing. The great opportunity you have with the version two always. You can make things better. And so, what we did with version two was, make our concepts a bit clearer and a bit more consistent in some cases. So for people who know version one, we have a great sidebar in the app that makes the status very clear. You have your local branches, you have your remotes in there. And in version one, you couldn't click anything in the, or not all the items in the sidebar. And well, we made it more consistent and now allow everything in the sidebar. That's just a small example for the concept. And on the other side, of course, we wanted to introduce features that we wanted ourselves, like the conflict wizard was one thing that I wanted, because I'm not that technical, and I'm really happy if I get some visual help in these cases.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Anytime I get a conflict on the command line, it's just like, well, I quit my job.
Enough is enough. So, yeah.
Yep. No. Keep going.
That's a feeling that everybody gets. That's a good thing to know. Another thing is we wanted to integrate more closely with the big services. So GitHub is used very widely. So Bitbucket is used. Beanstalk is a popular service. And well, we wanted to integrate more closely. So clicking, cloning a repository, downloading a repository in your computer should just take one click, and well, we did things like that. Yeah.
Pretty sweet, pretty sweet. So if you're on 1.0 now, what's the scoop? Is it required upgrade, or is you going to continue supporting 1.0, or is it a free up? I forget how it works.
Yeah, it's a paid upgrade. But it's 50% off for customers of version 2, so quite a big discount.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's not a required update, but we will not be able to support version 1 simply because of technical reasons, so we won't be able to support the code base until macOS 11.90. Both versions run on Yosemite even, so take a look at version 2, and if you like it, upgrade. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I think that's how I would, not that totally speculative, but that's probably how I would run a business too. You know, if I have a 1.0 product, we're going to do a major, major upgrade. We're a business, so we have to charge money for things because that's how it works. And
yeah, that's,
and if I did a major, major upgrade, it would be paid. But thanks for being a previous customer. We're going to make it much less expensive for
you. Yeah. And this is the to say this too, this is the first major upgrade in more than 3 years on the market. So we've taken our time to really do something really, really good. And yes, as you said, well, indie development is, well, we don't have Porsches here, just to say that.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. And yeah, it's not like you're doing it every 6 months too. So it's not like too often that would give people a little upgrade fatigue possibly.
Yes.
Well, I have lots of more questions about Tower. So I thought maybe we would just get in. I'll just continue sprinkling them in as we go through some Q&A. How about that?
Sure. Great.
That sounds good. I don't think we have any drama but news and links. I just wanted to mention real quick, since you guys are front end, there's been some really good talk, lately. Scott Gell, Filament Group, wrote a post about responsive web design performance. I will shamelessly plug myself. I've been writing about responsive web design and performance. So, it's a topic of conversation right now. So I would bone up on that. So. Just wanted to mention that, but let's get into get questions. We have one from Austin Peterson. I have never used Git before as a web developer or slash designer. I don't usually work in teams, so I've never been motivated to use it. I was thinking of how powerful it would be to be able to access my project files from anywhere and have a built-in version control. So I'm working in a worry-free environment that will allow me to experiment flawlessly from work and home computers. I think Git might be what I'm looking for in terms of version control, yet I don't really understand how it works.
It sounds like you kind of do understand how it all works a little bit, Austin.
It does, yeah. Tobias, any thoughts?
It sounds so, yeah. Well, getting into Git, as I said, is not a thing that just requires a morning of focus, but it's absolutely doable with the right resources, I think. And well, of course, with the aid of a GUI, I don't have to say that, but I do. It's really easier if you're using a graphical user interface to get into the topic. But you still have to really understand the core concepts. If you're on the command line or if you're on the GUI, that doesn't matter. The core concepts are important, and there is so much good documentation out there today. We just wrote git-tower.com/learn, which is completely free. It's a complete book with online resources, and that takes you from beginning to master, actually. So not a big deal.
Yeah.
Cool. So I would say, Austin, you are in a little bit of a weird situation, because I would say that, you know, it's not like I have a list of advantages to using Git in front of me right now, but I would say that teamwork is pretty high on that list. That if you're absolutely alone, that strikes off one of the, you know, I mean, that's what Git really makes powerful, is that you can manage this like a complicated code base without having to worry about screwing up, you know, and writing over people and stuff, because Git makes sure that that doesn't happen. So if you're absolutely alone, you don't need that part of it. But there's a bunch of other stuff that you get anyway, which is things like, it's a backup for yourself, for example. So if it's up on GitHub or whatever, that's safe then, because they're not going to lose that data for you. And, you know, I know we're kind of confusing the concepts of Git and GitHub, which we could cover, but I think a lot of people understand that. If it's on GitHub, then it can be public too. And it gives you an issue tracker and allows other people to fork it and send you pull requests and stuff too. So there's still some advantages to using Git, even if you're alone. And, I mean, you know, it sounds like there's a good learning resource at git-tower/learn. So check it out there. I think you'd be okay.
I was going to say, it sounds like, Austin, like some, like your home to work computer thing, that could actually be solved by a Dropbox or Google Drive. Like you just share the code between computers, and I've done that before, and it's pretty awesome. But the thing where Git would help you in version control, and this is kind of the big win, is like instead of saving PSDs as final PSD, you could just version them and like you just, you know, you make a PSD and you just say git commit or whatever. That one, I'm locking that in. That's the version one commit. And then you could, like, if you needed to roll back and reference the PSD from earlier, you could roll back that commit.
I've always heard that's kind of bad news to put something like a PSD in Git, because it's not like binary data, and thus like every single time you commit it, it saves in the Git log the entirety of that file instead of a diff.
Yeah, so
which is maybe
binary files aren't made for version control with Git actually, but you can perfectly do that. And well, I wouldn't do it for movie projects probably, because that could be a pretty huge repository in the end. But that's doable, and that's possible. Yeah, sure.
But I guess when I'm, even if it's with code or whatever, I feel like the way Git helps is if you're like, the second you're like, I'm going to try something.
Absolutely.
And you don't know if it's going to work, then that would be a place where you'd want to use branches. Like you just say, I'm going to do a new branch because I'm going to try something that might suck and might like break my whole website forever. That might be a place where you'd want to use Git as well. So that's even on your local machine. I think I said what I want to say. So let's go. Next question is from Shay Bunge. Writes in, when you make a commit in a VCS version control system like Git or Subversion, should the commit message be in past, present, or future tense, as in update README or updates README or updated README? I've seen all sorts, but I guess it's up to the personal preference of the developer. But is there a generally accepted standard? What do you guys use?
Well, there is a golden rule that says use present tense. So fix bug number 315. But as you said, Dave, I think it's really up to personal taste, or at least to the team's taste. So I think it's important to agree on a common standard in a team. And if you want to play by the rules, present tense is the thing to go. Yeah.
I'm fascinated that there really is a rule.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know.
That's great. I would have said past tense, but that's awesome to know. Yeah. I'm gonna.
I didn't invent
just
it.
Looking
by the
through
if there's
our,
a standard, I want to use it.
I didn't. Invent
I guess there's
that
some
rule.
Automatic. There's some messages that are kind of automatically generated. Maybe Tower does that. You know, like if there's an automatic merge or whatever, the commit message is merge branch master of github.com/whatever, right?
Exactly.
So merge being a present tense word. So I guess that, you know, if that's the standard. That's
That comes directly from Git. And don't ask me why it's present tense. I didn't invent it, so... I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's good to know. Present tense, people. I mean, whatever, or do what your team does.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm going to do a sponsor quick. We have there's an online conference coming up, an Environments for Human conference, and I feel like if you listen to the show, you know how these go. It means that you can they send you a URL on the morning of this conference if you sign up for it, that you click on that URL and you go to a special URL which is like designed to have a live conference in it. There's live video, there's a chat room, there's other stuff like who else is in the room, maybe files you can download, something like that. And then you ask questions to the people giving presentations, and you just leave that browser tab open all day, and you're like attending this conference from where you're home. The next one coming up is the Digital Biz Summit. So it's digitalbizsummit.com. There's Eric Reagan is talking about what it's like to work with somebody who's your spouse, business and marriage. So that should be pretty interesting. Emily Lewis is talking about hiring remote workers and dealing with payroll and stuff like that. Carl the legendary Carl Smith, who was talking about the future of teamwork, talking about how NBC ran a big successful kind of agency and they did things in interesting ways. So Carl will be talking about that. Leah Alcantara talking about from self-branding to merging brands. Rob Hart talking about cash flow in your business. All kinds of interesting stuff about, you know, leveling up your ability to actually run a small business. So it's a $99 conference coming up this August 20th. So check it out and level up your ability there. That's digitalbizsummit.com. We have another question. Michael B. writes in, I am a part of a very small team prototyping a new app. We are familiar with GitHub, but the enterprise company we're working with requires us to use Subversion or SVN. We work in the Mac environment. In the past, we have used Sublime Text as our IDE and source tree, which is, I think that's a probably you'd consider a Tower competitor to work with GitHub repos. But these don't play well with SVN as far as we can tell. The company wants us to level up in Eclipse so that we can use SVN because Eclipse is like a, you know, one of them fancy IDE text editor things that must have SVN built into it, I guess. But we're trying to avoid the clunky Eclipse road if possible. We have tried Versions, the Mac app, which is like a GUI for Subversion, but that doesn't have a good system for tagging and branching, etc. So Michael B. is just wondering, how do you recommend we attack this SVN dilemma?
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, so I see two possibilities. So if you really want to work and need to work with Subversion in a clean way, I think Cornerstone was mentioned, and Cornerstone is another Subversion client on the Mac, and it's a really, really good one. So if he didn't like Versions, I suggest he tries out Cornerstone. This is probably the cleanest way. There is also the opportunity to use Git SVN. That's a bridge, actually. So you can use Git on your local computer, Git as a front end, to a Subversion back end. So you can still use the Subversion server, but use Git on your machine and almost all of the advantages that Git offers. Almost all of the advantages. So it takes a little time to get used to that, to Git SVN. And if you need the full spectrum of Subversion, then go ahead and use Cornerstone and stay with Sublime Text. No problem with that. I wouldn't switch the IDE just because of the version control system. There are separate applications for doing version control, and if you're a fan of Sublime, use that and combine it with Cornerstone. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that there was like a weird bridge between version control systems. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know, another way, Michael, is to try to fight Subversion entirely. We've definitely that happened at Wufoo. In the Wufoo days, we used Subversion because that was just the thing back in the day. You know, it was just old school. There were Git wasn't really a thing, or if it was a thing, it wasn't nearly as big way back in the day. And we just switched. You know, it wasn't like an impossible thing to do. So, like, you'd have to be prepared to give the pitch on why to switch, because maybe there isn't any good things. But I feel like every time I hear these things duke it out, Git, like, always comes out on top.
Yeah, and I think it's a question of time, actually, before, well, most of the serious developers make the last of the serious developers make the switch. So you can postpone that point in time, but I think... Well, Git is the version control system of the future, and someday switching can't be postponed anymore, I guess.
So let's speculate a little more far on this, just because it's kind of fun. What do you think it would take? Because, you know, you'd think in the very simplest possible switch would be just like, I don't know, we'll just start a new GitHub repo and we'll just drag all the files into that. Get rid of all the subdirectories of that the SVN stuff, and then we'll push it up, and there we go. Now we're on GitHub now we're on Git. Like, it could be really easy, right? But it's probably not going to be that easy. Because why?
Well, I'd stick with your first assumption. It can be easy, actually. It's absolutely valid to start working with Git in a subversion style, I would say. So you don't have to actually do all the command line acrobatics to use Git and all the full commands set that Git offers, but you can use a very reduced command set to work with Git. On the other hand, the things that will, well, that will cause headache in the beginning are few, actually. You'll have to get a little bit comfortable with, the staging area in Git, which means, you have to explicitly mark changes to be in the next commit. This is a little bit different. So you have to tell Git, well, I want this change in the next commit. This is a little bit different, than in Subversion. And which is actually not that big of a difference, but branching, the whole concept of branching, it makes more sense in Git. So it's really, it's mandatory to be used in Git, instead of in Subversion, where you can opt to make branches or to use branches. And in Git, it's a core concept. So this will take the most time to get your head around, I think. And on the other side, it's a huge benefit. Once you get used to using branches and merging, you have become a way better developer. No kidding, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like, yes, the part of the change isn't just the technical, how do we move from one version thing to the next, is that you have to train people to think a little differently, and it's a little bit new syntax for working with it. You might have to change a little software or whatever. I was thinking that there's, because Michael said he's at an enterprise company, almost surely Subversion right now is tied into more stuff. It's tied into your deployment process or maybe your testing process and stuff like that. So there's a good chance that your build stuff has to change too. So, I mean, that might be part of the reason why it's complicated. But all right, but I wonder if there's some enterprise people that work with you, Michael, somewhere in some room that would get a kick out of working on that stuff anyway, because there's certainly people out there that love them some DevOps.
That's good. I was gonna add, I've worked with enterprise companies in the past who on .NET, which is like Team Foundation Server and all this weird stuff. Sometimes it's easiest just to use what they use because they pay you money. And so, and then you just use their tools, and then, I don't know, you just get through it. But work in whatever you I try to stay in Git as long as I can until I have to hand off something or produce something. That way you can work fast until the point where you have to work slow, if that helps. I don't know. All right. Shall we go? Next question.
Yeah.
Another question from Pierre Pavlov. I have a question regarding Dropbox Sync on a web host server. Where I work, we have Linux-based server where some of our clients' websites are hosted. Someone thought of an idea to move the entire website folder into a Dropbox folder. Okay. Thus, keeping all the websites constantly backed up to the cloud. That's probably good. And at the same time, using Dropbox built-in version history to easily revert back to old versions of images files when needed. Interesting. As a non-server tech guy, I don't really know about this approach. I know it's doable with symlinks and all that, but I just don't know if it's wise. Any pros and cons regarding performance and so on? We already use Git for version control of the code, so that's not really a reason, but we serve a lot of images and files that happen to be overwritten sometimes. It would be nice to be able to restore older versions of them.
Okay. Interesting. So if I get that right, the Dropbox is the deployment system. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of their shared deployment / backup.
Okay, so this sounds a little bit like open heart surgery to me, because sounds a little bit dangerous, but could work. So we have no experience with exactly that setup. it sounds a little bit as if changes could, well, let's say it a different way. If I make changes, I can be sure that some of them are not right and there are errors. And that's the thing why I love to have a version control system, because I know I mess up and I want to be able to recover. We have a deployment system that is really separate from that. And every time I hit the return button when I deploy something is a moment of fear. And I think it's good because I'm very aware that if I hit the return button now, the return key now, something will happen and it can go down south. And it sounds a little bit, if I could do that live in the Dropbox, I would be tempted to, well, it's like, it sounds like FTPing into your live server and making changes to, the database, live. And, well, if you're very careful, this might work, but I can't do it. Huh.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's clearly problems with going commando, you know, with that kind of thing where no matter, you know, you delete a semicolon and hit save and Dropbox syncs it and that's live. That seems incredibly scary, even scarier than like a normal FTP workflow kind of thing where you just upload stuff as you do. Yeah, pretty wild. Although Pierre didn't specifically say that's it's a one-to-one live like that, because he specifically says backup. So I'm not sure if maybe like there's a build folder or something that's the live site, but just the rest of the stuff is being backed up. I'm not sure. And I wonder, you know, certainly you can, like, let's say there's an image in your repo, right? Like logo.png or whatever, and the logo changes. You can still see the history and Git of that too, right? It's not like Dropbox is doing something 100% unique in that you can go back to an older version of logo.png. You can do that in Dropbox on the Dropbox website, but you can also do that in Git anyway too, right? Can't you see a history of images on?
Yeah, sure. You can restore and restore every file in every version. So this is the core job of version control. So I think there's no better tool. And the thing that Dropbox does on its website is it offers version control in a web application. So it's just one step farther away, but they're not reinventing the wheel in that case. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think you're getting a lot out of Dropbox. If you're not using it, we're saying if you're using it for deployment, you probably shouldn't be because that's scary. If you're using it for backup, you're already getting all that same backup for Git anyway, so you're not gaining a whole heck of a lot out of it. So it just seems weird. So it seems like we either don't fully understand or it's a bad idea. Okay, so yeah. I'm going to do another sponsor real quick. Media Temple. Welcome back, Media Temple. As a sponsor, Shop Talk Show is hosted on Media Temple. CSS Tricks is hosted on Media Temple. They've been good to me for a long time now. They have really good customer support. You manage, like, there's all kinds of different servers that they offer, right? They have the Grid is their cheapest one that's you can host like 100 sites on. It's probably good for like a ton of most of the websites in the world, and you manage it in 100% through their custom like management panel, which is really nicely designed. It really just they updated their design of their whole back end recently too, so that's worth checking out too because it's pretty cool. You manage like everything through that, or you can level up to get a bit more powerful of a server in which that then it comes with Plesk on it. So I don't know how many people. What's the other one? cPanel is like the Plesk competitor. It's like software that's installed on your raw server for managing that server. It's like server management software, I guess. Which is, that's where you go then if you need to make a new domain or make a new, well, you still have to make the new media template, but if you need a new database or you need to, like, I don't know, manage your cron jobs or whatever, that's what you do it through Plesk.
Managing cron.
Who doesn't need to do that, you know?
Gosh.
Does anyone have other hobbies?
yeah, I know. It's like my wife asked me, "What are you doing tonight?" I was going to manage some cron jobs.
Oh my god. I totally have an active cron job right now. It's for the anyway, maybe another time. We'll talk about it. They have WordPress specific hosting now too, which is cool.
Okay.
They have, you know, like you can be like, okay, I'm going to host a WordPress site with you. So they have, it's like one click install and it's like all customized just to deal with WordPress. That's a kind of new thing they have. Discount for Media Temple, 25% off your first month by using coupon code SHOPTALK. So go to Media Temple and use that code if you want to use that. And, we'll send you to the cool link for that. Thanks, Media Temple, for hosting and taking care of me when stuff is problematic on my website, which is all the time, but never your fault. It's always like, I'm always like, something went wrong on my website. They're like, did you change anything? I'm like, no, except for like those three plugins I just installed, but it's definitely not that. Anyway,
I started syncing Dropbox tonight
with the symlink. Yeah.
Yeah, with a command
line.
What's the
problem, guys?
What do you mean changes? All right. All right. Cool. Next question comes from Phil Thompson. I am in the process of writing some code that I'm going to use to release an open source, as open source on GitHub for people to use. I understand that it's good practice to append a license to a code, but there's loads to choose from. What license, if any, do you guys use for open source software, or which one do you feel is the best one to use? Will it make a difference as to which license to use if it's using an open API like Google's API?
Ah, now that's a good question. So like when you make a new repository on GitHub or whatever, almost all repos have some kind of license.txt in it. And so that's good. Do you work on any open source stuff, Tobias, and think about licensing?
No, I just wanted to say, please don't ask me to answer this question because I'm just as overwhelmed by all those different license types. No, not really.
Yeah. So
I was going to go ahead. I have some open source repos. They are licensed under WTFPL because I literally don't care what you do with them. And it's as it's what it describes. But I've learned that people in enterprise corporation have lawyers that get very sensitive that this is not a real license and it doesn't count.
It doesn't count or does it count? I thought it did kind of count.
It does, but not to their lawyers or whatever. So
great license.
Apparently,
then.
It's my problem. Yeah, apparently it's my problem now, so I have to change it. So I'm looking, you know, and if I license it GPL, then and they use GPL, then they have to open source all their code. Or
yes, like, exactly. So GPL is the one where it has the things that you use for it also have to be GPL.
Right. So and that's how WordPress is set up.
Yeah.
And so like. So, and then, in fact, if you tried to use FitVids on WordPress, you could not, and I use something like MIT or what is it, Berkeley or something like that, you couldn't use it because there would be a license conflict. Oh, my God. Then I'm going to get more emails and suck. Okay, so I have to use, I'm looking at the dual license, MIT GPL dual license, which means like if somebody wants to take it and get famous, they can do that and rich or whatever. Or if somebody wants to put it in their open source project or closed source project, they can do that. So that's currently what I'm looking at. The MIT.
MIT is like that as well, though. Like MIT, if you use something that's MIT, whatever you make has to also have MIT in it somewhere. I don't know if that means it could have MIT and other stuff too, but I know that that's generally the case.
Sounds like a license cocktail.
Yeah. isn't it sort of defeat the purpose of licensing if you're like it has both?
No, I thought that was good somehow. Like, I thought dual licensing was cool for some reason.
No, I think it is good and cool. It's like. It's what WTFPL, but in a very official manner. But it's just weird. It's like, it's I don't
just,
know.
I think you're, it's cool, but it's just too much for me to understand. It's a whole new world.
It is, but sadly, it's important somehow. And I thought the point of WF is like, I don't care, but it's still legally binding. As I think if you don't do anything at all, it's like it's still copyrighted to you somehow, and this might be just U.S. only too. By the way, we should say that because we, you know, I don't know how it works. In-
I'm pretty sure I'm a lawyer and we can go on record. No, I am not a lawyer.
But if you don't do anything, you're at risk a little bit too somehow, but not entirely. I don't know. I think maybe it's more strict if you don't do anything, and having a license like opens it up. So you'd think that not doing anything would be the most permissive thing you could do, but it's not really. And that now let's whatever pull out the not lawyer card too. let's just move on here. Sorry, Phil, we don't have better answers for you. I know that we talked about it fairly extensively at CodePen and decided that it was best for us as a company and the people and the users of CodePen to go to MIT. So that's the one that all CodePens are.
We should pay a lawyer $1 million to come on the show and talk about licensing.
Yeah, but really mean it. Oh man, that would be good.
Yeah.
Just every like, word out of your mouth
spend
is
all,
true.
All our shop talk bucks on this
a whole hour
just to answer your questions. Yeah, it's going to touch at least $2,000. It's going to be serious. All right, here we go. Next question. Hopefully, we didn't get you sued, Phil. Next question. Aaron Thomas from Leeds, UK, writes in. I like that you put where he's from. That's really awesome. Recently, I wrote an open source framework of sorts, which deploys WordPress projects via GitHub or GitHub using Capistrano and WordPress CLI, WP-CLI. It's a cool new tool that's out there. It pretty much solves all the issues you discussed, version control, database migrations, and speed and convenience, and makes deploying WordPress site to production environments takes literally seconds. It also does all the initial setup and installation both locally and remotely and a bunch of other cool stuff. It's completely revolutionized the way I develop WordPress sites, so I'm not really interested to hear what you... So I'm really interested to hear what you think about this approach and perhaps give it a shout out if you could.
There's a link to a GitHub repo, which we'll put up there. So it sounds like it's focused on deployment, but it also involves moving databases as well. So it sounds like it does a lot of fancy stuff. And version control is involved somehow. So it's probably a CLI command that's like when you're working on your local WordPress website and when you're ready to deploy, you go, you know, whatever, WP deploy or something, and it does all this stuff for you, or probably has little, you know, parameters that you can pass it to prevent the database from going up or who knows what. I haven't looked at it, so I'm totally speculating on what it does, but yeah. It sounds like it does a kind of a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know.
Capistrano is really big in the Rails world and really popular, so I think it's a great idea to use Capistrano or to use any professional tool for deployment, because I think this is really one area that most people and most developers miss out on, because you have version control, you have a professional IDE hopefully, and where there's something in the middle that is missing in most cases. And so how do you deploy things really? Do you use, well, back again, do you use Dropbox or do you use FTP or something? And with a tool like Capistrano, I think you're going a good way, because that's safe. That makes deployment safe. Yeah.
So I wonder, but Capistrano is a little, you know, it's involved to configure. So I wonder if this helps with that. Like, what do you need to give Capistrano to do deployment? Does it need, it needs like the FTP information probably, right? Because there's not that many ways that you can, you can communicate with the server, right? If it needs to move files somewhere, it kind of needs FTP, or it needs to SSH into your server and like do a git pull or something. But that means you need git installed on your server, and that might be a little weird. And then it needs credentials and stuff, and it needs...
You really need to put a little bit of love beforehand into such a workflow. You need to configure it and figure out what's the best way. But I think it's good to think about stuff like that at the beginning, because if you as soon as you have such a workflow working, actually running, its deployment is really, really easy. And that's, well, it relieves me. Yeah. It's a good sleep.
I like that too. Yeah. Like this could be some serious work to set up, but once it's set up, you're like in a good place.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I was hoping more questions about Tower would sprinkle in here a little bit. It was like what is Tower, for example, scriptable? So if somebody's like, I want version control to be part of my process, or I want deployment to be part of my process. Tower doesn't help you with deployment, but it's just for Git, right? But if somebody's like, I want it so that when I put, like, for example, do a Git push with Tower, that it triggers a deployment to my staging server also.
Yeah,
like, could you Apple script that together?
Not really, because we're thinking about such a feature, to be honest. But the reason we haven't implemented something like that is Git actually has its own system ready already, because you can use something like Git hooks. Git calls it hook scripts. Mm-hmm. That you can have Git run on certain events. So as you said, or as an example, on push or on, when you commit something. And well, if we implemented something that only works in Tower, we'd lose a little bit of the connection to the command line Git. So if you want to do something on the command line and the hook scripts kick in, and at the moment this works in Tower too. So you can have the hook scripts executed from Tower too, but you wouldn't have custom scripts, let's call it like that, or scriptability kick in when you do something on the command line. So this is a little bit touchy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have questions. Does Git Tower, I saw you like you can do like look at tags and stuff like that. Do you have the ability to manage and add and push tags?
Yeah, sure. This is a core part of Git and the version control world. So no problem. You can delete and create tags, even provide messages. So afterwards you wouldn't wonder what that strangely named tag means. That's all possible. Yeah, perfectly in the GUI.
Well. Looks like I'll be using that later, because that's my least favorite part. Is like you commit and then you push that, and then you have to like make a tag and push the references.
Yeah.
this makes it easier.
Absolutely. Anyway.
All right. Cool. Perfect. Here's my.
Do you got this audio one queued up, or should we just do a different one while you do it?
Oh, I got it here. Let's see if it works. It's from Augustin Aminabar, and it is here. Oh, could not play. All right, good thing they wrote a script. Here we go. Augustin writes in, been listening to your show from episode one. Oh, thank you very much. You keep me up to date, so I'll soon be trying Jekyll, thanks to you. Yay. Question. There's plenty of project management tools out there. We currently use Trello. Basecamp is big and scary, even for me. But GitHub seems pretty nice and friendly. Have you used it as a project management tool, and would you recommend it? Interesting question about using GitHub as a project management tool.
What does that mean exactly? Does that mean just issue tracking, or does it mean issue tracking plus other things?
Yeah, let's say, so Basecamp is, you use Basecamp for like messages and to-dos and stuff like that, right? And a calendar, maybe. Trello is kind of the same thing, as you just like write features and you prioritize them in an order. But you could do that on GitHub with issues and milestones, right?
It would be a very, very nerdy project management tool. So
it would be that. But you do get messages, and anybody that participates in a thread or whatever gets emails about it and stuff. So you could do that. But issues are, you know, sometimes a thread might not really be an issue. So that's a little weird, because there's no, like, you can't have like multiple issue boards or whatever. I don't even really understand milestones, which is weird, but I don't get it really. Or you attach issues to milestones. I don't know. I don't get it. But maybe.
You know, they just updated their issues thing. Yeah. And I read some critiques, Twitter critiques, I'll mind you, that like, great updates, except it's not good for developers, wah, 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 or whatever, which is maybe the thing, because this is GitHub, actually. I think I've heard it said GitHub uses GitHub to manage GitHub. So, like, everything GitHub does, like, if you need a new computer for your desk because you're a new employee or you, whatever, spilled coffee on your computer, you do a pull request to whatever the project is, like, whatever, computer services or whatever. You do a pull request and say, I need a computer. And then they'll fulfill that pull request and merge it into their project, which has nothing, you know, in it. So it's a very interesting, that's how they run their kind of back end business. So it sounds, I think you totally could do it. It would be weird, but we've noticed a dramatic drop in to-dos since we've switched over to to GitHub issues from like Basecamp. We used to do it all on Basecamp, but now we do everything. Like if you notice something wrong with a website, you just file an issue on the private repo and it works.
Oh, that's great. Cool. I think for stuff like that, but I think you will lose the not so technical people on that part. But if you're a team of only developers, I think you can go ahead. That's doable. Yeah.
How do you guys do it? What's your, do you have a, like, I'm sure, surely there's bugs, right?
Yeah, no. Are you kidding? Bugs in Tower? No. Bug free since the first minute. No, sure. We have lots of bugs. We use, Fog Bugs, actually, from Fog Creek software. So the guys behind Trello, actually, in the end. Because it can handle both, it can handle internal communication. So if we communicate via tickets or via bug reports, and it can also handle things that are coming from outside. So user requests are also collected in Fogbox, and that's the thing that we use. Yeah. And for wow. code management or for code hosting, we use Beanstalk. Which is great because it's a nice service, a service that supports both Git and Subversion. Because for a lot of smaller companies or even bigger companies, I think it's really a transition that happens over time. So you probably won't transfer every Git repository in one instant to or Subversion repository to Git, so this makes it easy to take it slowly. Yeah,
cool,
very nice.
We have a question from Michael White. Let's do one more quick. We're coming up on one the end of here. He says, "I'm lost with using Git and GitHub. I don't come from a computer science background, so the command line is not my favorite tool to work with. Plus, I work in Windows. We don't really have an native Unix command line. Currently, I use a GUI, GitHub for Windows, which helps a lot, but I feel like I should understand what's going on under the hood. I often come across an error like, you have a detached head, which I don't understand. And when I go online for answers, the solutions make no sense for me. My question is, do you know of a book or online resource or something to learn from this? We already covered that. There's one at git-tower.com/learn. Which will tell you about stuff like that, presumably, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It starts really from the beginning, and it's written actually for the not so technical people. So if you're looking into getting literature or books for learning Git, you will find lots of books for people with a information. Bachelor or something, and it was important to us to write something for project managers, for designers, for web designers, and so on. So might be a good fit, and it's free. Hooray!
Yeah, cool. He mentioned GitHub for Mac or for Windows, which is like different. It even looks different, I think, than GitHub for Mac. I thought we'd just mention that because I feel like you have some competition. Somebody mentioned SourceTree, which I've never even really seen that. But I would assume that like if you're considering competition for Tower, it's probably the, you know, the one that GitHub makes, you know, like how do you concern yourself with that too much? Or do you just kind of heads down, focus on your own thing? Or do you watch them really closely? Or
heads down and focus on our own thing, actually, because, well, to be honest, we're the almost the only Git client on the market that asks for money and that's we have to justify this. So we're really into making the best product. Where I think where we differentiate is we deliver a very good support. We deliver a very good design, a thought out UI and workflows and usability and such stuff. And all of this takes a lot of time and experience, which makes us a bit unique, I guess. And, yeah, that's.
I was going to say, GitHub for Mac just updated their UI. So that must have been good for your business, huh?
Yes, indeed it was. We're heads down and focusing on our own thing. And I think version 2 shows that. I encourage people to try it out because there's a free trial for 30 days. And if they don't like it, that there are alternatives, as you said, and they can use that one. And we're confident that we deliver the value that we're asking for in terms of money. Yeah.
Cool. I think it's weird how it kind of played out over time. Like in Michael's question, he asked about understanding what goes on under the hood. And I think that Tower is kind of the closest to that because, like, for example, the buttons in Tower are labeled what it's doing. Like fetch, pull, push, apply stash, merge, rebase. Those are the Git commands that do those things, right? Whereas I think it's like you would think that maybe a third party client who has nothing to do, you know, who is just can absolutely, you have the world is your oyster. You can do whatever you want, that you might try to like change those things to things that you think people's brains work a different way or whatever. But it turns out that's what the GitHub app does. For example, they have a big button that says sync, and you click that to sync it. There's nothing called Git sync. That's not a thing. Yeah. But that's so like, what is it doing under the hood? Who knows? You know, it does what it says, but it's like people like the word sync maybe. Like maybe that makes sense to their brain. So they added that as a thing. But I think that's weird that the one that's like closest to Git or whatever is the one that has weird buttons like that don't mean anything in GitLab, but Tower does. So anyway, I like that about it because that way when I feel like I'm not like moving away from understanding Git when I use Tower. Anyway.
Yeah, we're walking a very thin line, actually, because we want to try and as you said, and stay close to Git. And on the other side, of course, we want to make things as easy as possible. And that's a thin line. And that's our job, actually. And we're trying to make this as good as we can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We'll have to wrap it up. I'll have to save my unsolicited advice section for later.
All right. Thank you, Tobias, for coming on the show. I guess if people aren't already following you and giving you money, how can they follow you, give you money, and what's the one big thing you'd like to plug before you
they
leave?
Can follow us on Twitter via GitTower, on the web, git-tower.com. And the one thing I want to leave, save indie developers and the queen, probably. Yeah.
Right. Perfect. That's profound. Good job. All right. And everyone, thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. You guys in the chat room are good. Thank you for listening live. Thank you for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to rate us up on your store or wherever you get your MP3s. So we appreciate it. And Chris, you got anything else?
ChopTalkShow.com.